You know how when a band gets back together, if it's the singer and then some new people, that's okay. But if it's like the old musicians and a new singer, that doesn't really work. So Chris Tucker isn't in this movie. That's what I'm saying. But nevertheless, Next Friday was the number one movie in America. Theme music.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
I'm Sean Collier. This is the number one movie in America. I'm here with two, what, master vampires? What was the word for the good kind?
Oh.
Elder? Master?
Good kind?
There was a good vampire?
No, not good kind. The strong kind. There was the...
Master vampire.
It was just master vampire?
Yeah.
They really thought that one through. Really got creative.
I think you're both master vampires.
Thanks.
That's the point. That's Camille Adams.
Hello.
And Robin Hitchcock.
Hi.
Remember vampires? Remember?
Barely.
I do remember vampires being like, you know how much people hate women? And then the country was like, we sure fucking do.
Hold my beer.
Yes. For future historians trying to piece together the collapse of the United States through podcasts.
This is the only record.
Like 5 days after Roe v. Wade was overturned, and I am depressed.
It's a rough go. It's been a lot of thinking on a lot of overthinking. I'm already an overthinker, and I'm just been spiraling out.
You know, you stop for a few hours and then you go, oh yeah,
right.
On Friday, you know, that happened, and I went to, you know, a lighthearted nostalgia concert.
Mm.
Like, I went and saw Everclear and Fastball and the Nixons that night.
So there's like three songs that you wanted to hear.
Yeah.
The Nixons. Wow.
Yeah.
The sister song. That's all I got. Is that all they got?
That was a shorter set.
Okay.
They were the one of the lineup that looked and sounded like themselves.
Okay, good.
But it was, you know, it was a very back and forth because it's like, this is what I need to do to get my mind off of it. Man, does this feel like a horrible, like, yay, that song from when I was in high school. Should I have joy? Should I be allowed to be happy right now?
Yeah, that's a lot of the back and forth too. It's like, oh yeah, I'm doing this thing. I'm having a great time in this moment. And it's like, oh.
That's grieving.
Yeah. Well, Tony was spot on.
He tried.
Serving us up a woman-hating movie about religion running everything in a ham-fisted way. That was Vampires. We gave it a 30. That's 12th from the bottom. Here's a fun fact. We hate vampires and like witches.
Yeah, that's surprising in a way.
A little bit,
Just given me and Camilla being like super fans of Buffy.
Right, yeah.
But nothing lives up to Buffy.
That's the problem.
Yes.
Looking at our results, Underworld Evolution got 42 and a third. Vampires, 30. Twilight Saga Breaking Dawn Part 1 got 24 and a third. The Craft, 82 and a third. And Witches of Eastwick, 71 and two thirds. I mean... This has something to do with which movies we're drawing.
Yes.
Right, yeah. That's yeah.
The N is small.
Yeah. So maybe Tony Goldwyn hates vampires and likes witches. Maybe. Yeah.
Tony, is that true?
Has he been in either?
No.
Not that I think. I don't think so.
No.
Tony, tell us if we're wrong.
He's just been dealing with ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of ghosts, a lot of schemes. Ghosts, yes. And schemes,
yeah.
Are the villains in Tony's life. How do you bounce back to a frivolous movie podcast after dropping the decline of Western civilization at the top of it?
Well, we could talk about the decline of movie sequels, which is so beautifully illustrated here.
You know...
Go ahead.
It's surprising for me, because I don't think I had seen... Maybe I saw Next Friday one time.
I also was like, this seems vaguely familiar.
Right, yeah.
And of course, if I had seen this before, I would memory hole it because it has no value.
No.
Right. But, and we will get to it. I got to say, there was a scene, a bit that boosted my rating considerably.
Was it the vacuum cleaner? Because that is responsible for about half my score.
No. This bit, like, I watched it like five times, the scene. I rewound it. It's when he's talking about Baby D.
Oh, yeah.
Bathroom, like the whole moment from when he like goes into the bathroom to check to see if his eyes are still red, mm-hmm. all the way to when he leaves and is like, man, don't be worried about what I'm doing. Y'all didn't even help me. That's just. Oh, you're talking about how she's breathing all heavy and then talking about her cupcakes. And like before they even come out, she knows about the bootleg cupcakes. It's just, that's just like pure gold. And that just set me off. And so that in itself, that's why I enjoyed the movie. I mean, it was kind of like downhill from there for me.
There are isolated moments that made me laugh and smile. But overall, I think Sean's, the thing that surprised me so much about this, and then I guess we should fast forward to summary and facts, is that I watched Friday right before it. Terrible mistake. Horrible mistake.
Right. That's,
same.
That's kind of why I didn't do it again. I was like, this is going to be too high of a...
Yep. And we'll talk about Friday more. But watching Friday, you don't think, oh, this is all resting on Chris Tucker. And it's not. But you think that Ice Cube is also key to the success of the film comedically. And then... I don't know if he missed his buddy or if the guy who co-wrote the first one was writing all the good material, but like it just, Ice Cube seemed half asleep in this movie. And it just, it was like, it felt like we had peanut butter and jelly and I would have said that Chris Tucker was the jelly, but no, he was the peanut butter.
Well, I think, yes, losing Chris Tucker was key. The other was this dumb setting change. Like, I guess you had to. I guess you thought
meaningfully use it, which reminded me of what was the hip hop movie that we watched? The one that was not Fear of a Black Hat, but was Fear of a
CB4.
Black Hat. Yeah, remember how it was like they were from the suburbs, but then they did nothing to explore that information. They also do nothing to explore the suburbs in this movie.
Well, we went somewhere else and split up all the characters, but then it was just you could have done that. You could have rewritten this whole script to have it all in an empty warehouse with two changes.
Yes.
Right. I think they were relying really heavily on the look at these folks who were in the inner city and look at how they moved on up or whatever. Mm-hmm. He bought this house, but that's all he had money for was to buy the house cash. And so when he goes to the side and he's like, look at this is our backyard. And he's got this beat up, like crusty ass furniture.
That's just not that funny.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I was like, what? You've got a whole pool with like no water in it. It's just.
I hope this was a valuable lesson to some people about property taxes.
Few people figured that out.
Even that as... Okay, yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Don't worry, this won't take long. Let me give you a 60-second recap. Someone say when.
I don't have my...
It'll be fine.
Yeah, when?
After one little fight, Craig's daddy got scared, so he's moving with his uncle and cousin in Rancho Cucamonga. Craig kicked Debo's ass in the first movie. Now Debo is planning to break out of prison, and everyone knows it, so Craig goes to lay low in the suburbs with his uncle, a lottery winner, and his cousin Day-Day, an uninteresting loser. There's a feud with some Latino neighbors, a love interest, some business with Day-Day getting fired from his job at a record store, Debo hiding in John Witherspoon's dog catcher van to find Craig. They all end up in the same place in the movie. Just kind of ends after approximately 70 weed jokes and 95 poop jokes.
Yes.
The end.
That's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, it's not much to it.
No.
And it's also like the pacing was kind of jacked up too a little bit. Like it got a little bit slow. Like there were these chunks of like, you know, the scene and the bathroom and then like. It gets kind of slow and just kind of jagged.
That was another problem with watching it right after Friday is that F. Gary Gray directed Friday and it was really fun to be like, oh, he is figuring it out.
Right.
Like, this guy is going to direct the Fast and the Furious movie. He put a camera on a bicycle wheel, you know? And like, then you watch this and it's so, I mean, I hate saying this, but like sitcom-ish direction. Very like, we put the camera on the set.
Right.
And they did funny things in front of it. Mm-hmm. And funny is generous.
Right.
Yeah. I had definitely not seen this movie. I had seen bits and pieces of Friday. I rewatched Friday. And my main reaction to watching this movie was like, why should I keep watching this movie? Like,
I felt trapped. That movie's 90 minutes long.
98 minutes long. But like every time I paused it, you know, to go do something for a second, I would come back and be like, I mean, I kind of know.
I get it.
Whatever. And then I paused it with about 25 minutes left. they were all hanging around the Latino family's house. And I was like, wait, this is the climax. If you take out 5 minutes of credits and like 3 minutes of wrap up, we're at the end. What? Right. We're, this is, they just built to, we're going to go over there for a minute.
Yes.
And it's like there was some subplot where he was robbing them, but I wasn't paying attention or I didn't care.
You probably didn't care. Yeah. Because, I mean, even like the stakes were not as high either. It's like, okay, right. No. Oh, all of a sudden now we owe property tax, which is kind of like an afterthought.
Yeah.
Throw it in there. And then it's like, oh, by the way, these guys have hydraulics full of cash. Let's go get it. And it's like.
It came in so late. And, honestly, watching Friday, one of my criticisms of Friday is that it has an abrupt shift in the third act where it's like, I had no memory of the whole like guns are bad speech. I was like, what is occurring? What movie am I watching?
Like, what?
Right, exactly. And then a shootout and a big fight and all that stuff. It feels tonally inconsistent with the first part of the movie, but it is competently handled.
Right.
Yeah.
Whereas the shift to, oh shit, we didn't have a plot yet in next Friday is not competently handled. And so it's really, really hard to like, focus enough to know what's going on. It's complicated, and who gives a fuck?
Yeah. It's, I don't know. Like, Mike Epps is funny, but I've never really thought of him as, like, a real heavy-hitting comedian.
He's someone who I consistently forget exists.
Right. Yeah. It's like, oh, yeah, hey. But I think that they were maybe relying a lot heavily on his improv.
Yeah, yeah, I think that they were like, he'll be our new Chris Tucker. Right. And I'm sorry, he's just not.
Like, he's not, and in no way, shape, or form. And his, I mean, I kind of like his whole, like, punk-ass demeanor. It's like, his whole, everything is just like, I don't want, like, I enjoy that, but we needed someone else there to round it out.
Yes.
I don't know how Ice Cube feels about anyone or anything.
He was asleep. And also, like, the whole thing is that in the first movie, he's this, 22-year-old unemployed guy. This is 4 years later, and what is he?
He's still unemployed.
Right, but they don't explore that. It's just, like you said, what does he feel? What does he want? What does he care about?
So all of those Mike Epps scenes are him like desperately trying to be funny while Ice Cube just sits there and looks at him.
He's playing the straight man and he's just
He's not even doing that, because if he were playing the straight man, he would like call him out on his bullshit or like or just react in some way. Like Mike Epps will improv for 30 seconds and Ice Cube will kind of go, damn. And then the scene ends. It's...
Yes.
This movie, it was released January 12th of 2000, the second number one movie of the new millennium. Stuart Little is the first, but Stuart Little was a 1999 holdover, meaning that, yes, next Friday, the first new movie to top the charts.
Oh, this came out in January?
In this millennium, yes.
Also, the millennium started in 2001.
I know, but no one counts that.
I got, dragged for saying attorney generals the other day, and so I guess that Faxy needs to be on her.
I feel much more strongly about attorneys general than this. We didn't not have the party in 1999 because we were like, well, technically it starts in 2000.
We were celebrating Prince in 1999.
Yeah, mostly.
Basically, yes.
And then in 2000 we celebrated the end of the millennium. Anyway, but this is neither here nor there.
But it would be a new decade if nothing else.
Sure.
And the first number one movie of that decade was Next Friday.
That makes sense.
It won its opening weekend with $14.4 million. Other new release was the sci-fi bomb Supernova. Have you heard of this?
It sounds familiar.
Yeah, that's sort of.
I feel like there's a blonde woman involved.
Deeply fascinating, like dark, sad sci-fi, which I love, but more on the action type, with James Spader and Angela Bassett and Robin Tunney.
I have seen this movie.
I haven't seen it.
It's like discount Event Horizon, and it is bad.
Isn't Event Horizon already discount?
I don't like Event Horizon. This movie is bad.
This went through four directors, and somehow the last one was Francis Ford Coppola.
What?
Like, three people had quit, and they were like, can you just try to edit it into coherence? And he was like, sure, I'll give it a shot. And they said, and everyone's like, oh, he made it worse. I'm desperate to see this, but I feel like that's not going to be rewarding on any level.
No.
Debuted in seventh with $5.7 million, despite opening on twice as many screens as Next Friday. As much as Next Friday is not a good movie, this was happening a lot, especially in the 90s, but well into the 2000s, where studios would like half release a movie with an all-black cast and then be like, oh, we had no idea that
black people
were
gonna go to the movies.
Right. Yeah. Which, yeah, so that's the only reason that makes sense is because James Spader, I don't think in 2000 he was like a big box office draw.
No.
So
I don't know if he ever was a box office draw. He's, but.
I mean, word was out that that was terrible.
I mean, I definitely saw that movie because James Spader and Angela Bassett were in it. And I was like, great. And then I was like, I hate everything.
not going to rule it out for myself. Next Friday was a 2-week number one movie in America, earned $8 million in its second weekend, barely holding off the debuting rom-com Down to You. That was a Julia Stiles, Freddie Prinze Jr.
Oh, he drinks a bottle of shampoo. That's all I got.
Okay.
I've seen it.
Next Friday won only by a couple $100,000. Lost the top spot in its third weekend to the thriller Eye of the Beholder. Total of $57.2 million against a budget of just $11 million. 45th overall for 2000. It is the most successful of the three films. Friday earned $27.4 million. Friday After Next, which is a Christmas movie, I guess?
Yeah. I know it exists. That's it.
Came out in 2002. That earned 33.5. Next Friday is the only number one movie in America. Friday peaked at number two. Friday After Next opened in third. The soundtrack. Yes, the soundtrack was pretty successful. I thought I remembered that last week, and I was right. It went gold. It peaked at number 19 on the album charts. The first track is Ice Cube's You Can Do It. That is from this movie.
I like that song.
Yeah, I had forgotten about it until the movie started. I was like, oh, yeah.
That's on one of my Improve My Mood playlist.
Yeah.
That'll do it.
Yep.
If you put your back into
it. Yeah, exactly that.
Went to number 35. Somehow went to number 2 in the UK. This doesn't sound like England. And yet, they liked it. The second track on the soundtrack is a new song by NWA.
Really?
Kinda. Yeah. It's Chin Check is credited to NWA. In this case, that is Ice Cube, Dre, MC Ren, and Snoop Dogg. Snoop Dogg, not in that group, but sure. So it's only a partial reunion, but it is to this day the final new track credited to NWA. And it was the first time Ice Cube was on an NWA track after he...
All right.
After they had their big blowout. Mm-hmm.
As depicted in the film Straight Outta Compton. Hey, let's check in with the MTV Movie Awards.
Of course.
Why not? Ice Cube was nominated for Best Comedic Performance.
Comedic.
Adjacent?
Best performance in a movie attempting to be a comedy. Yeah.
Alongside Jason Biggs for American Pie, Mike Myers for Austin Powers 2, Parker Posey for Scream 3.
Oh, yes.
I hope that nomination.
I hope she didn't win, did she?
No, the winner was Adam Sandler for Big Daddy.
I mean, Parker was great in Scream 3.
Like, yeah. Absolutely. Well, she was.
But Scream 3, I don't think is a good movie, but she is great in it.
Yeah,
yes.
I gotta redo rankings because, like, it's in my head, it's so easily 1, 2, 5, 4, 3. But then I'm like, 3's probably better than. I don't remember Scream 4 at all.
Yeah,
neither do I.
For the longest, I didn't count Scream 4. I was like, no, Scream is a trilogy. I was like, fuck Scream 4.
Now part 6 is coming.
I know. I think my ranking is 1, 2, 3, 5, 4.
I gotta rewatch.
My ranking is 1, 2...
You've not seen any.
No,
other
I've
streams?
Seen 3 and 4. I will at some point watch 5.
Mm-hmm. It's on Paramount Plus right now.
I still don't have that.
It's like $5.
I know.
It's nothing. Yeah, Matrix won Best Picture that year. That's the 1999 awards.
Yes. So
I have very few facts because no one has bothered to note any facts about Next Friday. But where was Chris Tucker? He says he didn't think Friday needed sequels, so he didn't want to do it.
There you go, buddy.
Which is correct and a good decision.
Right.
Other people say that he was born again around this time.
Oh, boy.
It was.
The more relevant thing, he only made 3 movies between 1998 and 2007, and they're the 3 Rush Hour movies.
Really?
Yeah. Like, he was already kind of, for whatever reason, backing away. He made Rush Hour in 1998, didn't do anything, made Rush Hour 2, made Rush Hour 3. And in the 15 years since then, he's only made two movies. Silver Linings Playbook
and
Billy Lynn's Long Halftime
Walk. Oh, boy. So you could see every pore on his face.
Right.
I have not seen that movie. Mm. That's one of the movies where they use like way too fast of a film whatever it's called. There's too many frames in that movie, right. So it looks creepy. Yeah.
I read a New York Times thing with him when he was mostly doing stand-up around 2010, 2011. He was just very vague about like, it kind of seemed like he had enough money and wasn't all that bothered.
Which, you know, if I were in his position, probably. Like, right. You have those three Rush Hour movies. Yeah. That money.
He wakes up with another $1,000 because of Rush Hour every day.
Right. Yeah. I'm just like, you know what? I'm just going to live my life.
Also, I love Chris Tucker. Mm-hmm. He is a small doses person.
Yeah.
So like, he's perfect in The Fifth Element where he just pops in and out, makes you laugh.
Right.
And then he goes away for a while. Like, The Rush Hour movies, I'm always like, by the end of them, I'm like, okay. Yes.
Yeah.
So I think that him only being in 5 movies in 20 years is great. I would maybe want him to be in 10 movies in 20 years.
Right. And he was muted in Silver Linings Playbook.
I weirdly love that movie.
Me too.
And he is great in it. And also, it was so nice to see him again.
Yeah.
I remember Colin and I like grabbed each other's arms in the theater, like, oh my God, our friend is back.
I mean, he should do what he wants, and good for him. I have a lot of what could have been, because if you play Ruby Rod in Fifth Element and Smokey and Friday within the same calendar year, you have demonstrated that your range is infinite.
Yes.
Like, that is so... So I wonder what else he... And maybe he still will. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
He also spent a lot of time hanging out with Michael Jackson, I learned.
Mm.
Like, they were... I don't mean like they knew it. Like, they were friends and hung out, which is, that's the weirdest thing to me.
Also, it's weird. Like, how do you hang out
with my question?
You, like, pet his giraffes or something?
Like, I guess he used to have a stand-up bit about the time he and Michael went to a Prince concert together. It's like...
That's even more bizarre to me.
Right.
Like, because it's also like, how do you hang out with Prince? Like, how does that
work? Right. Just, Chris, good for you. I don't know why.
I hope he has a great life.
I'm sure. That's all the facts I have, because what is there to... there are 7 notes on my page, and one is, I have little to say. Like, it's just... You know, it feels like you waited 5 years to do a sequel, and then you were kind of like, so we're just going to hang around, and we're going to get a few sets, and we're going to...
I would expect this the year after Friday came out. Like, this if this was a Rush job, but this wasn't...
No, they had plenty of time to finesse the concept.
Right.
So, okay, watching Friday again, if you'll recall, last week I said that at some point in the deep pandemic, Colin and I were like, ooh, let's watch Friday, let's see if it holds up, right. And then... Colin was like, it can't not.
I can't take it.
Right. Rewatching it with him, I was in stitches. That movie is so funny. Yeah. But I also was like, that whole thing with like, I hate that I am citing Chappelle because he's certainly not the first person to talk about this. But like, are white kids in the suburbs laughing at this for the wrong reasons? Right. Like, and I definitely was wrestling with that more rewatching it yesterday, because I, you know, only ever watched Friday in a basement full of white kids in the suburbs.
Sure.
And I think that there is some of that going on. But then watching next Friday after, I'm like, oh no, this is that.
Right.
Right. And, and it's not. And I think that part of it is also because it's not exclusive, or it's primarily making fun of Latino people, harshly and cruelly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just feels so icky. And also women, too.
Yeah.
Like, it just, the whole movie just feels gross in a way that when you think about Friday, you're like, no, this is a million times more wholesome.
Well, word never used to describe Friday.
And it's not, you know, I'm not gonna say that Friday is a feminist text.
No,
but
I was kind of upset. I don't remember Felicia being that like pathetic, and like so by Felicia feels much more mean when you actually have the context.
But in next Friday, there are 3 women. One of whom is trying to entrap a character in a pregnancy scheme.
Mm-hmm.
One of whom is defined by being fat. And she isn't that
fat.
and she looks really good. Yeah. I'm like, put her in unflattering clothing at least.
Right.
And then one who's hot. That is the end. Where was the mom even?
Unavailable. And also, that was one thing about Friday. I forgot how fucking funny she is. Yes.
Oh, she's great.
Oh, God. The point where she, the hot lady across the street, and she she's like, come over later. Okay.
Right, yeah. Or even just like when she makes all of that food, and he's like, yeah.
That's all for me. Eat some cereal.
God.
Use Friday, water. It'll be fine.
Friday is so funny. There's so many bits in Friday that work, and there's like, three bits in next Friday that work.
And they tried to do a lot of the callbacks, like the 35 to 45 minutes. That was twice. Like, come on now. Like, and bringing Stanley back out of nowhere.
Okay, here's the thing. My job is to help people be funny. And I have written into multiple syllabi, poop is funny. But this movie is making me reconsider that.
It's too much.
Too much poop.
It goes there first. They're like, we're back. The band's back together. What's the first bit to really set the tone? He's going to fall over in some dog shit.
Yeah. Right.
That's your first idea.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
Other than making fun of the opening title crawl, which was kind of funny.
I did enjoy that.
It was too, like, had he fallen in the poop? And that had been like the only shit reference throughout. And then we just kind of come back to it ever so often throughout his travels. That would have been fine. And or even, you know, him having to poop in traffic, because I'm sure we've all been there.
Yes.
And then it was even, you know, you started to feel sorry for
him. Yeah.
The vast, vast majority of my points are for John Witherspoon.
Yeah. He's another one for me that's like small doses. And I would have liked to have seen him. I don't know if it exists, but I would like to have seen him in another character at some point in in his acting career.
I mean, I'm not sure what I have seen him in other than Friday and then his voice performance in The Boondocks.
Well, for me, I primarily think of him doing stand-up.
Oh, okay. Which no familiarity with.
He was, I mean, I don't think his act ever changed, and it was always...
It was this?
Well, it was some of this, but more written out as stand-up material. Fantastic, you know, maybe not one of the best ever, but certainly one of the most underrated longtime stand-up performers ever. And we should acknowledge, remember when this show had a co-host, a fourth co-host? No, because it was for like 7 weeks. Aaron and John performed together extensively.
Oh, cool.
And they were fairly close. And apparently he was just the best guy, too.
Was he a calm man?
Yes.
Okay. Because I think that's what's really just like sticking out, because I have like erratic comedians are not my thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Witherspoon stuff, and also like Cat Williams. Like, I'm afraid that man's going to drop dead on stage one day.
Yeah.
But, so that's usually like where I'm. And I just want to see him calm.
He also walked onto stage and said 14 lines for Friday just to be like, I know there's a few people here who want to hear, so here you are.
Let's get him out of the way.
Yeah. No, he was great. Rest in peace. I do also like the points of I'm going to give that aren't for him are for Tiny Lister.
Can we talk about Tiny Lister for a second?
Mm-hmm.
In Friday, he is credited as Tiny, air quotes, Zeus Lister.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's too many nicknames. You can't. Yeah. His name is Tom. Okay. I love it when a big guy is called Tiny. Classic. Okay. What's the Zeus part? What's
Tiny
happening?
Tiny Zeus.
Do you want to know every possible detail in
does
the answering?
Does it have to do with wrestling?
Oh, is he a wrestler?
Sure does.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
He was the villain in No Holds Barred, the 1989 movie where then WWF first was like, well, Hulk Hogan is a big star. We'll make the movies ourselves.
Sure.
And so they just cast Hulk Hogan as a wrestler not named Hulk Hogan. Poor marketing. And had, you know, the evil bad guys. It was very... To call it over-the-top comedy is irrational. It's over-the-top comedy in the way that, like, you know, Three Ninjas is over-the-top comedy. It is like a Goonies level, but without any charm. And Tiny Lister was the bad guy as a character named Zeus, and then for a year or so took Zeus out of the movie and into wrestling and wrestled Hulk Hogan as Zeus.
All right.
yes, he had some acting roles in between, but I guess in 1995, he still figured most people would know him as Zeus.
I'm glad there's at least an explanation for it.
Right.
Also, yeah. As if his face, as if he's not recognizable enough. Right. Mm-hmm. Nobody's checking the credits. Right. Tiny.
Tommy yes. Tiny Zeus Lister Jr.
Right.
Anyway, yeah. Another cast member no longer with us.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
He died from COVID.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah. Aw.
He's great because he gets exactly how far to take
yes.
his mm. I'm big and mean.
Like yes.
If he went a little more with it, it would be cartoonish.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's great.
Yeah. Like I said, like that one bit, that was my my bread and butter right there. That was the high it's, point. Yeah. And
I was good like, if you rewind to watch again.
Right. Yeah. And also, and I was like, oh shit, like this is going to be awesome.
Oh. So, no, that's a shame.
Because I had started watching it while I was doing something else. Yeah. And then, I was like, oh, well, I'm going to, this that scene. And I'm like, well, I'll pay attention. I'll save it. Well, Dan and I will watch it tonight. And then it was like,
There are that feeling you get when you come into a movie with goodwill, right? Mm-hmm. I was straight off of Friday, so mm-hmm. I was right. feeling great. And that moment where you're like, oh, I think this is bad. I'm not 100% sure where it hit in this, but there was definitely, like, I know I started getting nervous when I saw that Chris Tucker's not in it, but then it was, like, mm-hmm. around 10 minutes in, I was like, oh.
This is a shame.
I think it started to get, like, considerably, probably around when they got to Pinky's.
The record store?
Yeah, when they got into the record store.
I think it was even before that for me. I think that maybe when his aunt was, like, trying to kiss him, I was like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And
maybe
like, I actually
like,
thought that she was doing the best she could
to
play that like incredibly thankless role.
That's
perhaps.
My fourth female character. I'm
oh,
sorry.
Oh, yes, yeah. That's right. Like, the whole joke there is, like, she likes sex.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Oh, my God.
Right? So, like, I don't know. That was around the time when I was like, I think this isn't going to be any good.
No, I actually, maybe it was around the time when they started to smoke at the...
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, okay, and then she fell down in his crotch. Okay, that's the other thing I want to say. So, like, I had never seen, I don't really like talking about so maybe I'll edit some of this out. But this is the first time I saw Friday after and I was like, I enjoy this pot humor, right?
Mm-hmm.
The pot humor in Next Friday is so thin. Like, with the exception of the vacuum bit, where
his
face gets stuck in, he's trying to vacuum up his smoke so they don't stink up the room, and his face gets stuck in the vacuum. That's funny.
And what I half liked whatever Mike Epps was on about when Ice Cube was in the fight with Pinky and they're just still having their stoner conversation.
Yeah.
What were they talking about?
I don't even remember.
Ice Cube pooping when he was little? Like all the different times
yes.
that Ice Cube had pooped when
it
they were kids?
It was also a poop joke.
So that's the thing is that
right.
they're
a 12-minute poop joke.
Right, yeah. The bad poop comedy got in the way of potentially good pot comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, what was that? Like, who was so obsessed on the writing staff with poop?
Somebody was not aware of some digestive intolerance they had at the time, and they were working through it in a script.
I liked the bit where the original aunt died of shock when they handed her the check.
Right.
I liked Roach. Roach, I think, did his job.
He was all right.
The white guy who also died.
He killed himself within months of this movie.
Yikes!
This movie's cursed.
Why are we talking about
cursed
this
films
cursed film
next Friday? It's a little outside the format, but I think we could make it work.
I don't understand his character.
Is the point?
Yeah, like
token white boy.
I guess so, but we don't need that.
No, but somebody
we
in the
don't
studio
need
told them
in this
they
movie.
Did.
Somebody at the studio said you need a white boy.
Yeah, because I don't remember. Were there any white characters in Friday?
There's certainly no important white characters in Friday.
Yeah, and then we also had like Michael Rapaport, who probably
probably
begged somebody to let him in this movie.
It's super extra gross because he's like actively racist,
sir.
Yes,
it's like as much as you preach in real life about what you're not, this isn't a good look.
No,
the trailer.
Hey, stop! Ah!
This is the rematch!
Punch
you!
Now, Craig, it's gonna be different living out here. Don't let your uncle or your cousin get you into any kind of trouble.
I'm beginning to like Rancho Cucamonga.
Daddy, Craig's here! Boy, you looking good.
Why don't you give your auntie Sugar some sugar?
Come here.
Oh, damn!
You see how we live? We live wild!
I feel 5 pounds lighter.
We live rough.
Ooh. Yeah, I like it rough.
You got a restraining order on a little girl named Baby D.
Nice house. I didn't expect you to answer.
Hey, we got that Ricky Martin CD. I love him.
Where the hell you been?
No, I didn't drop you on your head when you were a kid.
New Line Cinema presents.
Meet Miss Hope.
I'm gonna give some breakfast to my dead homies. I miss you, man.
Ice Cube.
What's your name?
Carla.
I think Carla's got jungle fever, I see. It's lunchtime, eh?
Some days are better than others.
Damn.
But nothing is better.
I love Fridays.
Than Next Friday.
Better open up that window.
I got an idea.
Do it again.
I honestly think this trailer is a very good representation of the film.
Yeah.
If I watched the trailer before the movie, I would have known going in it would be bad.
Yeah. I wouldn't have seen the movie.
I absolutely didn't. Yeah. If I did see this movie before, it was because it was on TV already.
Yeah.
And I absolutely didn't make efforts to go watch it.
Oh, I don't think I did either. I think it was probably very similar to how I saw Friday, is that I was hanging out with stoner friends in high school and they put it on in a basement.
I thought I had seen this movie and it must have just been a different one of the other 12 Ice Cube movies that are kind of like this.
How many are what? There that
like
many?
I had a clear memory of Ice Cube in a convenience store and his dumb friends have stolen the ATM out of the convenience store.
That's not Ice Cube.
I'm pretty sure it's
friends
Ice
stole
Cube.
I know I've seen this movie
and I know what you're talking about, but I'm going to Google this.
I apologize if it's not Ice Cube, because I have an image in my mind of Ice Cube.
I'm pretty sure it's Anthony Anderson who steals the ATM.
No, the store owner was thanking Ice Cube for helping somehow and gave him a free drink. And then the bit was Ice Cube's like, oh, can I get chips? No. Can I get a Slim Jim? No. How about
that?
It? No.
Appears to be part of Barbershop.
Oh, maybe it's
Yes. So Ice Cube was in Barbershop.
Yeah.
But it is Anthony Anderson
that steals
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Anthony. All right.
And Lawrence Tate's brother.
You can cut this out. What is the. We're just talking about other movies vaguely remember. Barbershop's a better movie than Next Friday.
Oh, absolutely.
Friday,
yes.
Right. But yes, there was a point in time where I was in love with Ice Cube, with O'Shea Ice Cube Jackson.
And, because he's very good looking and charming.
Maybe.
Okay.
It was before he started acting.
Okay.
It was so yeah, because it was like his rap days. I think just the gruff. I think is what it was. Just this big burly, and he's always so mean.
You just made his face, which is amazing. Again, I'm sad that this is radio, but like the furrow thing that he does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that was it. I just have this clear memory in high school of having this ginormous black and white poster of him.
I mean, I think he's very good looking. I love that he created a genetic copy of himself in his son.
Right.
I'm always impressed with people who have very strong genes like that. Mm-hmm. And I like his music. This made me lose some opinion of him. I just truly was like, you wrote this and started it, and it fell apart on your shoulders.
Like, what happened?
Yes.
The soundtrack came out first, and I don't think that's an accident. I think it's like, this is...
What
if we make one of these, we can
Empire
sell
Records.
A lot of albums.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah.
It's a good soundtrack.
Maybe it was something also... in the editing of this movie, because I don't remember, maybe I wasn't paying attention, but why did Roach have a bandage on his arm? Did something...
At some point...
Did we see that on screen?
He said early... Like, there's still not an explanation. I do remember Mike Epps randomly saying, oh, you fell and busted your stitches, but we had never heard what he had stitches for.
Right.
Unless... That guy was a skateboarder, unless he had just... fucked up his arm the day before, and they were like, fine.
Right.
Fine.
Maybe.
Write
that was
it in, guys.
Yeah. My letterbox list is called Fuck You, It's January, which is a list of all the movies that got a wide release in the month of January with a letterbox rating under 3, because that's the dumping ground, right? That's like, we give up, we have no idea, put it out in January, and no one will notice. this is a self-fulfilling prophecy. There aren't that many of these before, like, the late 90s.
That was
like,
when they started doing that?
That became a truism, and then it started happening more and more. Because recently it happens a whole lot.
Yes, and I always see the trailers for those movies during my Oscars Death Race movie-going period, and I'm always like, oof.
That's a January.
Yep.
Here's a rating. I took Camila's method and will justify my points. 10 of them are for John Witherspoon generally. 4 more are for him singing to his burrito while he eats it.
That was funny.
There are a few good bits.
5 points for Zeus and 1 point for the expression on the dog's face when he's really high. That's 20. A total of 20.
I'm so glad that dog did not die.
Yeah, that was actually, was that a puppet? How did they accomplish that?
What? Which
the,
part?
The face of that dog.
Well, if you get a dog to lie on his back in a certain expression, it's just going to look like that.
I was impressed.
Mm-hmm. And I guess sometime, maybe the dog was high. Maybe they blew a little smoke in his...
Yeah, maybe they got the dog high.
Yep. Wait, what was your rating again, Sean?
20.
Wow.
I don't have a justification for all of my points. Some of my points are just for vibes, but right. I will say I am going to give it a 4-point bonus because this movie crystallizes turn of the millennium makeup in a way.
Old girl's makeup, the girl next door?
Yes. It just as a makeup enthusiast and also someone who likes the history of makeup, I'm like, this is an important primary source.
So this is before we started to blend?
Yes. And boy, did we want the outline of our lips.
Oh boy.
To be fully darkened.
Yeah. That was a time.
Which, like, is kind of coming back.
What a time to be alive.
Yeah. Oh, and just like the lavender eyeshadow, which is a look that I like. Like, you have light eyeshadow on right now, and it looks great.
Thank you.
But, like, oh wow. Anyway, so that definitely was one thing that entertained me during the film. So I'm giving at least 4 points for that. So anyway, my total is 15.
Yikes. All right. So apparently my love for Ice Cube and that scene with Mike Epps has just like really, really made my heart swell. Because and I don't know what it is about this movie. I don't know. 58.
You are allowed to like what you like.
Yeah. I mean, I have no reason to watch it in its entirety ever again. But I will find that scene on YouTube somewhere and put it in my favorites.
Great.
A total, or an average rather, of 31
that
points.
That feels appropriate.
Yeah.
I think that if I had all my constitutional rights intact, I would have a higher score for this movie.
You know, and I'm moving this week. Like, I stopped moving to watch next Friday. That doesn't help. To the bingo card. Hey, it's a new bingo card,
new
everybody.
Bingo card.
Some nice additions like a payphone, revenge, first time viewing for all of us, the Bible. Explain 6 degrees of Tony Goldwyn.
Well, if we can connect an actor in this movie to Tony in 6 degrees, I didn't try with this with Friday before I...
Somehow this goes through Patrick Swayze, but... We'll just leave that one off until someone has to come prepare. If you come prepared
with
a good 6 degrees, then you can have that square. Certainly, one of the actors is deceased is getting crossed right off.
Yep. Sadly.
Will we count revenge? Is Debo's revenge?
Absolutely.
That is totally, yeah. So one thing about this movie, I know we're wrapping it up because who cares, but I don't really think this movie needed Debo in it.
It didn't.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, is that the only reason to put him into the suburbs?
Another reason. Maybe he's just going to go visit.
Right, exactly. Yeah, the movie takes place in one day.
Right.
Exactly. He's just going to hang out. And all these shenanigans would have taken place with or without Debo. And also the fact that you pointed out at the top of the show that everybody knows that Debo's trying to break out except the police.
How do they know?
The line was like, word got around that he's breaking out next Friday. How does that happen? And if you're afraid of him, call the jail. Say, hey.
One of your inmates has a plan to break free.
Everybody knows about it. And the plan was just sheets tied together. Try harder next Friday.
Yeah, we did. we didn't need it.
I have it, by the way, 6 degrees.
Oh, snap.
Okay, so Tiny Lester to Gary Oldman in The Fifth Element.
Mm-hmm.
Gary
Tiny
Oldman.
Was in that?
Yeah, yeah, he's the president.
He's the president.
Gary Oldman with Ken Watanabe in Batman Begins.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ken Watanabe and Tony Goldwyn in The Last Samurai.
Whoa.
Well, do we all get that or just
we
you
all
get
that.
It?
Okay.
We all get that because we suffered through the movie.
Yes.
And also I feel like Ice Cube said I can explain to Pinky.
Yes, he did. He fully did.
Did someone make a call on a payphone? Because then I would have bingo.
Yes.
When?
No, yeah. Didn't
yes.
Lester?
He
Tiny?
called in the the fake Craig's in Trouble. Bingo.
Wow. Ooh, that's a bingo.
Wow.
Instant bingo. Wait, I can explain Free Space Revenge and payphone.
Amazing.
Hey, look at that. Wow. What do I get?
Wait a second. This is definitely your second bingo, for sure.
This is definitely my second bingo
yes.
this year.
Yeah.
So what do?
You get to pick a movie.
I guess.
Off the list or?
On the list.
Okay.
Off the list was an unprecedented
fourth
bingo.
So yes. What about a third?
Well, I guess one of my bingos was a tie, so we had a movie draft.
Two people get it at the same time, it goes to a movie draft.
Right.
What did you get for three? No, three was you got to decide what the 100th episode was about.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll draw one this week and I will pick next week. I'm just telling you, I keep trying to force the natural through. Maybe this is the time.
I mean, it's baseball season.
It's baseball season.
So if anybody wants to suggest to me what goes on the next bingo card, I am open for suggestions
yes.
at @_RuggedAngel.
I feel bad. You printed it out and everything.
I know. In color.
Already done. I still forgot to bring you those magazines. It's just... I wasn't coming from the office today. That's the
goodness gracious.
That's the problem. All right. I'll enjoy deciding what to watch next week. The thing that'll keep me away from the natural is I keep saying we added 30 years of additional movies. We'll see what happens.
Okay.
It's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. I'm going to assume I'm the only one that's seen Elvis.
Yeah.
Please tell me, is it as bad as that one all-timer pan made it sound?
No, I gave it an 8 out of 10.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Why?
It's.
I mean, what did you like about it?
Two things primarily. One is it's not structured like every other music biopic.
Okay.
It is not, we will go through this person's life from beginning to death. Truncating the part after they had hit songs and that's the end. It's structured like a movie trying to structure it. It has a frame story that is actually about Colonel Parker reflecting as he dies. So that gives them an excuse to kind of make it a more satisfying movie story instead of just a biography. And you know, it starts and it's an assault of Baz Luhrmann visual audio intensity. And I'm like, he's gonna have energy for this for about 25 minutes and then we're gonna get normal. No.
What? Have you seen any of his other films?
Right.
Gatsby kind of settled in the middle. That's the only movie he's made in the last 10 years.
Okay.
I thought he would do a lot at the beginning and pop back up and then otherwise it would be a normal thing. Never.
Okay.
It is madcap, over the top entertainment from beginning to end.
It's a fucking circus show.
Yeah. and so it's a lot. Like, you should match your mood, you know. don't go in too sleepy or too hyped up. But it's just very, very entertaining.
Are you a fan of Elvis anyway?
Not particularly.
Okay.
More so now, you know, like I didn't really care, but you know, I'm a little convinced, and by that I mean, like every music biopic, I listen to Elvis in the car on the way home,
right,
and a little bit the next day, but yeah, you have to be up for an intense movie going experience.
Mm-hmm.
If you are, I think it was quite good.
I might watch it when it's on HBO, but I just
it
feels like, I mean, another one. It's like, haven't we told the story?
Are there Elvis movies? I mean, I know there's movies starring Elvis. Is there an Elvis biopic?
I'm pretty sure there has.
I mean,
I've seen one or two.
Or there's probably like a VH1 movie.
Yeah, that's probably what it
was.
I know, there's probably one that exists and I'm like,
we've done it. But also, like, I just don't really care.
Right.
Yeah, so I am only interested in this movie if it's bad, which is...
The one I hear about is Elvis by John Carpenter, starring Kurt Russell as Elvis.
Oh.
From 1979. I don't know if that's good or not.
What?
Made for television, originally aired on ABC.
I might have to watch that on purpose.
Shelley Winters is his mom.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay.
Joe Mantegna's in it for some reason.
Because it's Joe Mantegna.
Yeah. Well, he could be in everything as far as I'm concerned.
I liked Elvis and I liked the black phone.
Oh, yes. Please tell me. Is that worth, because I'm about to risk my life to go. Yeah. Because I want to go to the theater and see that. I've been like waiting for this for like months.
Chance, a deadly disease. Ethan Hawke is great. I don't think it's, you know, an all-time classic, but it's very satisfying. It's very engaging. It's very, I am hooked on this story and want to wait and see how it plays out. It's only even a horror movie because it's a little more violent than you expect it to be a few times. Really, it's more of a spooky mystery just with very dark subject matter. Because there's abducting children, so it's not Scooby-Doo. But like it's structured like that. Will we solve this puzzle in time? Yeah, Ethan Hawke is great, and it's satisfying and not too long. And
I am very much enjoying Ethan's resurgence. Mm-hmm. Like
I love Ethan Hawke, and I want the best for him.
Mm-hmm. I've never thought about him one way or the other.
Really. He was an early formative crush for me.
Yeah, he was never that for me. Like I never, but like recently, it's just like, you know what? I could kick it with Ethan. Like he seems like a decent person. He's probably a little strange to talk to, but I am here for all that he's doing.
Camila, what did you watch? I watched basically nothing.
You will tell us about, give us You Can Handle the Truth of a trip to Dollywood.
I went to Dollywood for the second time.
Oh, really?
The first time I went to Dollywood was because my sister and brother-in-law live in St. Louis, and they wanted to find a place that was easy for them to drive to and for me and Colin to drive to. And they were like, how about Pigeon Forge, Tennessee? And I was like, great, we'll go to Dollywood. And none of them wanted to do it, but I forced them to, and I had a great time, and they tolerated it. This was a trip for friend of the show, Abby Feuder, who was celebrating or is celebrating her 40th birthday. And so going to Dollywood with a bunch of people who are pumped to be at Dollywood, even better.
Oh, I'm sure.
I was sad that the museum was closed, but Dolly herself was there.
Shut the front door.
That is correct. I did not see her because I was in a pile of losing my bodily autonomy, depression. But I'm really glad my friends got to see her. Aww. So that's good. Anyway, if you've never been to that part of the world, it is a lovely vacation destination. I did want to say I watched the first 20 minutes of a movie called Trespass, which the premise is some firefighters. Charlize? No, that's Trapped. The premise of Trespass is some firefighters find out about treasure and in an old decrepit building and go after it. And then Ice Cube and Ice-T stand in their way. And I was like, yes, awesome. This is the greatest premise for a movie I've ever seen. And it was so bad, I had to turn it off. Like, I made it like 12 minutes into it, which is just feels mean. Yeah. So it's on Tubi right now if you want to see if you can get more than 10 minutes into it. But I assure you,
that's this week's challenge. Watch more than 10 minutes of that film.
Yeah.
I started to watch Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness, and boy does that title, like, it's fucking chaos. Like how does anybody get through it? I haven't finished watching it.
You gotta go to the movie theater.
Oh,
that's
sweet
the thing.
Fancy
It'd
Moses
be trapped.
Yeah, I didn't finish watching it, so I mean at some point maybe I'll get back to it, I don't know, but it was just I think I just don't like Doctor Strange.
I don't like Doctor Strange. I messaged Colin. You can watch it without me as long as you leave it keyed up to the relevant portion of the credits. And if you know, you know. He was like, I want to watch it with you, and also you're going to want to watch it at some point, or I guess technically I will have to watch it at some point. And he said, you will need me to be there to punch.
Here's the thing. This is no longer a spoiler. One, it's been long enough, and two, you've both had ample opportunity. What you have, I couldn't talk about this at the time because it was too spoilery for a new release.
Give me a reason to finish watching it.
This,
I think he's about to give you a reason to not.
This is not, the marketing is a red herring. This isn't Doctor Strange 2. It's WandaVision 2.
No.
This is a direct sequel to the first season of WandaVision.
Remember the parts of WandaVision that were not good?
Yeah, I know. But like I'm saying, this is not like, remember your beloved character, Doctor Strange? We're continuing his story. No, they are continuing the story told in WandaVision season 1.
But are
so
they
if you care about that.
Through sitcom parodies?
No.
Because
no, not
at
all.
That is why WandaVision was good. And then once they got rid of that, WandaVision sucked.
I liked WandaVision throughout because I love both character and actress.
Okay. Mm.
I liked it.
Well, you'll when we both eventually will watch it and we'll talk about why we don't like it.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe I will. I don't know. Sometimes I think I'm going to hate something and I end up liking it.
I don't know. It just seemed like a lot happening when I was watching it, but I did watch. The only other new to me thing I watched was In the Heat of the Night.
Yes.
Like, first of all, we don't have like literal movie theme songs anymore.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, the movie's called In the Heat of the Night. Let's write a song called In the Heat of the Night, and that's going to be its theme song.
Growing up, we would always watch Murder, She Wrote, and like when it was in syndication, and In the Heat of the Night, the TV show would come on right after it. And to me, the theme song to In the Heat of the Night is part of Murder, She Wrote.
Nice. But, it was very, like, it's on HBO, and this was, like, how I found it, because after we watched Next Friday, I was, like, kind of just tooling around through, and it's like, oh, hey, In the Heat of the Night is on here for freebies, so let's watch it. And, I mean, it's a good movie.
Yeah.
It's, you know, 1967, so you have to think about that. And it's,
it is very much a movie from 1967.
Right, exactly. Yes. And the whole point of it is that Sidney Poitier goes into this racist ass town to help themselves. Actually, he doesn't even. He accidentally finds himself there, and then they ask him to help solve a crime.
While you're here.
Right, yeah. Even though we just totally, like, you know, disrespected you every which way and up to do this. But I gotta say, like, the level of racism that's in this movie is not as bad as Blazing Saddles, where it's supposed to be. But what I love is Sidney Poitier is just has this whole intensity about him throughout the whole thing. It's like, I wish a motherfucker would. Yeah. Like the whole thing.
Oh, when he slaps the guy in the greenhouse.
Yes. Yeah. It's so good.
Mm-hmm. So satisfying. And I'm sure that must have just been like a really big deal in 1967.
That was a like pivotal moment in film, period.
Right. Yes. It's a pivotal moment in our fucking culture.
Yes.
It's like okay.
You hear
everything shift.
Right.
It's like, oh.
Like, you cannot be hyperbolic about how important that moment is.
Right.
And even detached from that history, it's just fucking satisfying as a film viewer.
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. What a great moment.
And then just like even watching like after, you know, the white guy tries to, you know, have his, you know, still like be threatening, but when he leaves, he starts to cry.
Yes.
So it's beautiful. So yeah, I would absolutely take the time and watch In the Heat of the Night if you have HBO Max. And yeah.
There's something about late 60s through the 70s where it's like, I feel like I can smell this movie.
Yes.
I feel like I can like feel the titular heat. Like there's, you know, without the aid of 4K perfect cameras, you feel so present.
Yeah, I could feel the film of dirt that's on the sweaty. And what's funny is like maybe like 10 minutes into the movie when we first are introduced to the cop, and he's just like chewing really hard on that gum. Yeah. I was like, he's a racist. Yeah. Because that's like,
that's the racist chew.
What did I just watch? The Parallax View. Have you ever seen the Parallax?
Of course I've seen the Parallax View.
What is that?
That's good. That's
it's a classic 70s thriller.
Warren Beatty is a reporter who thinks he's on to... He witnessed an assassination, and everyone who witnessed the assassination is being killed now. And he's running to try to figure out what happened. Just a paranoid, like, post-Kennedy, post-RFK, post-MLK, you know. It starts with a... The assassination's on top of the Space Needle, and like people like chase the assassin, and it's implied that the assassin falls off the Space Needle.
Mm.
One, he does have a funny what when he falls because it was a 70s movie. But two, then they cut out to a wide shot, and you go, well, yeah, he just would have fallen down onto the next thing. There's like the observation platform. He would have fallen like 6 feet. I guess if he bounced really hard, Parallax View is good, too. But In the Heat of the Night is certainly better.
I think if I had to take a quiz right now where it was like facts about the Parallax View and facts about 3 Days of the Condor, I would fail.
I haven't seen 3 Days of the Condor.
Well, it's similar.
Yeah. Let's draw a movie. Like I said, I'll pick one next week. But before we get to that, we will land on 150 episodes, and I haven't got the rhythm of drawing a movie yet.
That's okay. That's why I edit. Choo, choo, choo. Pew, pew, pew.
I'm scrolling bad. I'm scrolling with...
Do, 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 do.
Before we get to that, we may or may not watch The Help.
What the fuck, Tony? What are we doing?
I don't want to watch The Help.
Who has a veto?
I have a veto. I'm going to play my veto.
Exercise my veto, man.
Okay, yeah, thanks.
You're welcome.
Is that all the vetoes?
I think it might be.
Okay.
I definitely don't have any.
I don't want to watch that.
I can't do that.
And it's, I don't want to talk about it. Right. No.
We've done it. We, yeah. Everything that I said about Blazing Saddles, we're going to imply to that.
It's much worse than The Help.
Oh, yeah. I don't know why this makes sense, but between Blazing Saddles and Next Friday, we don't have to watch that.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I don't exactly know how that math checks out, but it's true. So instead, which cannot be vetoed, one, because we already vetoed, and two, because we don't have anything, we'll watch Papillon.
Cool.
What is that?
This movie is dope.
I've never seen it.
It's Steve McQueen and Dustin Hoffman escaping from prison.
Oh, okay. I can do that.
1973. I love really long Wikipedia genre titles. Papillon is a 1973 historical drama epic prison film. You know, one of those. One of that thing that exists.
Wow. I haven't seen this movie since I was a youth. As a youth, I loved it. So it is possible. It's extremely problematic. It's possible.
2.5 hours.
No good. It's 2.5 hours long. The Help is also 2.5 hours long.
The Help is also 2.5 hours long. And,
I still would have had a problem with it. Fun fact, I don't think I've ever seen a Steve McQueen movie.
Oh, well, get ready to lust.
That's a good veto. Good performance on the veto there. Before we block off 2.5 hours of our lives, next Friday, as we said, rang in the year 2000. We're going to count. It was a Wednesday release, January 12th. We're going to count the following weekend. So the second weekend, the second full weekend of the year 2000. Mm. Sure. What was the number one song in America?
NSYNC.
No.
Britney.
Not Britney. NSYNC did not retake the top spot until July 29th.
Ah, yes, that's when I was...
With it's going to
be... No strings attached.
It's going to be May. Yeah. Britney did not have a number one this year.
Mm. What?
Mm-hmm. The first number one of the new millennium, just going to keep saying it to make Robin mad, okay. Was Smooth by Santana featuring Rob Thomas.
Yes.
For 2 weeks.
J-Lo?
Then the song we're looking... Not J-Lo either. The song we're looking for 2 weeks before... you don't think of Savage Garden after the 90s, but no. For 3 weeks in the year 2000, I Knew I Loved You was number one. None of these are the song we're looking for.
Matchbox 20.
No, we were closest when we were talking about Britney.
Christina Aguilera.
Because what's closer than Christina Aguilera?
Genie in a Bottle?
No, go
Come on over.
No, you split the difference.
Genie in a Bottle, Come on Over. I'm totally blanking.
Is it a slow one?
It would be a mid-tempo pop hit.
We're going to need to, as Colin likes to say, improv this one. Can you break it down?
Is this or is this not from the film of the same name?
What a Girl Wants.
Thank you.
There we go. That's all I needed.
I don't think it is from that film. Is that movie good?
I am not sure I've ever seen it.
Subs question. Is Christina Aguilera good? I've never decided.
I don't feel comfortable answering this question in a room with two people who have lived in Pittsburgh longer than me.
Listen, I don't give a shit about that. But okay. I did run into her at what was it, used to be Zethos in Southside, around her height.
This is exactly what I'm talking about.
But
I miss that.
Yeah, I don't know her. I don't give a shit about her being from Cranberry.
I thought she was from Wexford.
Or yeah, maybe same diff. But I enjoy Christina.
I love the song "Come On Over."
Yeah,
that's also on one of my get into a good mood playlists.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I like a lot of her stuff, and I also feel like her and Britney would make the is the perfect pop star because Britney can't really sing, but she can dance. Christina can't really dance, but she can sing.
Yeah,
so I think you put them together, you get Christina Spears.
mine is. I was in Paris. I've been in Paris for 3 days in my life. I'm not showing off.
when I was in Paris.
Saying when I was in Paris is inherently showing off.
I know, but it was for 3 days as a college
student.
Doesn't
matter. Longer than I've been in Paris.
It's that was one day after the moment of this is the better story. As I was waiting for somebody, I was waiting to meet somebody, and I was sitting in a bar drinking a Guinness and smoking a Camel with the filter and watching Full Metal Jacket on mute, and French techno was playing. And I, as I sat there, I thought, this is the coolest I'll ever be. This is the coolest I will ever be in my life.
You are in a white man's novel from 2002.
Exactly. Story. Now, the next day, we see a crowd of hardcore paparazzi. Not to be insensitive, but the paparazzi that killed Princess Diana are crowded around. I know it is, but to give you, this is not like two guys. This is a true scrum of Parisian paparazzi are crowded outside a hotel, and we stand there for an hour, and then Christina Aguilera comes out. I'm like, I'm in Paris, and I waited for an hour to see someone from Wexford. This is bullshit.